It was toward the end of a month-long retreat at Spirit Rock, and I was heading in for my final interview before at the very end of the retreat, and I'd very carefully, very mindfully packed all my clothes and decided, you know, what I was going to wear on the way to the shuttle and to the airport and so forth, and had everything all just set up perfectly, and I went in for my final interview. And I was sharing about, you know, my insights, and, you know, it had been a challenging retreat. There had been periods where there was not a lot happening, but I really felt I got a lot out of this, and I'm really looking forward to going home and really applying it in my life. And I was talking about my readiness to go, and the teacher said, so you feel ready to go? I said, yeah, I'm all packed, and I'm just going to be waiting for the shuttle. And this is, I was going on and talking, and this more and more this concerned look on his face. And then he said, you realize the retreat ends the day after tomorrow, don't you? Tonight's talk is on seeing clearly. And in case you have been judging yourself for not seeing clearly and getting hijacked by delusion, I wanted to share a couple of tweets I ran across of just some examples that might give you a little comfort. So these are short little snippets. Just bumped into a mannequin and said, sorry. And then said, oh, I thought you were a person. Then realized I was still talking to a mannequin. Walked up to a baby-holding stranger, thinking it was my sister, at my daughter's soccer game and said, give me the baby. Interviewing for a nanny job, was told the job would involve light housekeeping. And I replied, I've never kept a lighthouse before, but I'm willing to try. So I offer that hoping it might give you some comfort. I would like to talk about what happens when the muddy water begins to settle. This aspect of what it means to see more and more clearly into the nature of reality. And I'd like to talk about how really the foundation of the practice is the here and now in the senses. And then to talk about seeing more and more clearly into the reality of impermanence and change. And then seeing more and more clearly into the reality of how your relationship to what is changing directly affects the degree to which you will feel stress or dissatisfaction or suffering. And then to talk about this third characteristic of reality, of the sense of selflessness or no self, that experience of who you are, that as the one who is aware. So this talk is about what it means to see more and more clearly, but also what it means to cultivate a heart that can hold it all. This will be a bit of a practice talk as well. We'll take some time to try on some practices. We've pointed out so many skillful means for how to train your attention. Ways to arrive, to gather your attention, to be the observer, to get more and more nuanced, whether you discern, whether you just simply name something or whether you really lean in and investigate it. We've talked a little bit about taking time just simply to rest in presence. I'm reminded of a story Gil Fronsdal tells when way, way back when he was interested in learning about meditation, he went to Southeast Asia to learn more about it. And at that time, there really wasn't any, there weren't any systems to really support people. So he went to a community, and basically they said, okay, there's your kuti, there's your hut. We'll check in a week. And he said to, something to the effect of, what are the instructions? And the teacher said, keep your awareness in your body. That's it. So how can that be? We are reminding ourselves again and again what it means to be here now, awake and alive in the senses. To be aware of your breathing as you're breathing. And to be aware of hearing as you're hearing. And be aware of eating when you're eating. And to be aware of kvetching when you're kvetching. And Kate offered that wonderful line, that classic line from the Buddha. Within this fathom-long body, I declare the beginning of the cosmos, the sustaining of the cosmos, and the end of the cosmos. And so our practice is this dance of forgetting and remembering. And we can forget for long periods of time. It's kind of humiliating how long you can go forgetting that you're in a body. When you start off and the next thing you hear is the ending bell, where were you? But at the same time, there is this miraculous element of remembering. These words from Dana Falls. It only takes a reminder to breathe, a moment to be still, and just like that, something in me settles and softens, makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper, and I remember again that life is not a relay race, that we will all cross the finish line. That waking up to life is what we were born for. As many times as I forget and catch myself charging forward without even knowing where I'm going, that many times I can make the choice to stop and breathe and be and walk slowly into the mystery. And so, quite often, we start off a retreat with a profound recognition of how depleted, overstimulated, and exhausted we are. And you may still be working through that biological need for rest. And if you simply followed that biological call for rest and just responded to that, as I've been saying in some groups, that could transform your life. Because you're in a process of filling your cup. And when your cup is full, the world looks very different than when your cup is empty. So to be aware of that biological call for rest and the distinction between kind of this psycho-emotional sloth and torpor avoiding aspect. One sure sign that you may need rest is when you're meditating. And you go to brush something off your shoulder and you find out it's the floor. I found that to be it's a helpful tool for me. But as you settle, if you are getting that sense of rest, you may notice that as the silt settles, something starts arising. You may notice there's a little less reactivity to what's happening. You might sense it, as some traditions call it, the arising of the witness, the observer, that cognizing function that can more readily name what's here. That sense of the one who is aware, that non-judging, curious, non-reactive quality of mind is more and more present, perhaps just in glimmers, but it's there. it's coming along. And we've talked about this circle with the line through it, that wonderful analogy. Above the line is what you're aware of. Below the line is what you're not aware of. And you may have noticed how the line has moved, that you're now more somatically aware of what's happening on the inside. You might begin to notice the cyclical stories. You realize, wait a minute, that story has come through 5 times today. Perhaps you've noticed that. Or you might notice the relationship between stories and how they're related to other things. You might notice, like, wow, when I'm just beginning to notice that when I feel something unpleasant, that I end up in a fantasy. Might notice that connection between the body and some form of disassociation. And you may begin to be more and more aware of the changing feeling tone inside, this play of unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral, and how there's like this meter that's sort of pushing away certain things and leaning towards certain things, and how it's just fluctuating all the time. Different thoughts come, oh, I like these. Different thoughts, oh, that's not good. That pushing back and forth, that inner reactivity, that sensitizing gets more and more delicate, and your attention to it gets more delicate. And you begin to notice how things change. A wonderful story someone tells of a 5-year-old at a birthday party. And all his friends are there. And they're singing happy birthday. And everyone's having a great time. And he bursts out in tears. And his parents come over and say, what's wrong? And he says, I have to wait a whole year before I can have this again. Can you relate to that? When I went to another long retreat, this is way back when, and sometimes I'm informed by this school that says it's not how you feel inside, it's how you look, that's important. So during the interviews, I felt I was very self-conscious around how I appeared in these interviews. And maybe you've noticed that, just the self-consciousness of what do I say, you know. And as I've shared before, there's that sense of like, I want to appear sharp and intelligent, but I don't want to be arrogant. You know, I want to be open and sincere, but I don't want to be naive and immature. I want to be articulate, but I don't want to be self-absorbed and narcissistic. And so I was obsessing over what I'm going to share in my interview. And so I would be in this process on the day of my interview of like, oh, I could share about this really dark feeling I'm having inside, or oh wow, I've just uncovered this really innate sense of distrust. Maybe I could share about that. And what I noticed was it just kept changing. So hard to find something that I could bring into an interview. And at one point, I remember going in for my interview, and all I could say was, it just keeps changing. And have you noticed this in your experience? And have you noticed that you can be doing a sit completely wrapped up in a tight little knot on something, and then later on, you have no recollection of what that was? It's fascinating. There is some practice of meditation where after your sit, you recount the thoughts. You try to recount all the different thought forms, which is kind of a terrifying idea. It's sort of like going back through your browser history, you know? I was thinking about this, and I was thinking that some of my meditation are like just a drunken monkey randomly clicking links on the computer. But this becomes an important part of the practice. It's seeing into this first characteristic of reality, of seeing just how much everything changes. So many thought forms, so many different sensations, so many different moods, different states of consciousness. They're all weather systems just coming through and taking shape, and sometimes they grab our attention and they just don't let go. Sometimes we can let them flow. So just to take a moment, if you would, if you can just close your eyes. And just as a little experiment, just to take a moment to, or this maybe a minute, and just notice what's changing. And you might try on this inquiry just for a minute. Is there anything in your experience that doesn't change? And the Buddha said, all is impermanent. And what is the all that is impermanent? Objects of the eye are impermanent. Whatever is felt as pleasant or unpleasant, or neither unpleasant nor pleasant, is impermanent. Likewise with ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And if you like, you can open your eyes. Remembering this, that all things born of causes and conditions are impermanent and subject to change, can be such a powerful reminder in your practice. Remembering that when you're caught, when you're stuck, when you feel hopeless, remembering that all conditioned things change, is tremendously helpful. And when you feel like you've finally arrived in that open, spacious, compassionate place of presence, there especially, it's helpful to remember that this changes too. And remembering that all conditioned things change, it can soften the mind and soften the heart in that remembering. Knowing at the same time, we forget. So this fundamental remembering has a way of opening our awareness, opening the heart. An opening night, Law mentioned the Piscataway people who lived here before. And as I've been walking, I've just been thinking about this culture, this incredibly rich culture of tradition and raising families and people falling in love and having babies and people dying and being born, this incredible culture that lived here that is no longer here. Could they have envisioned how their world would change after generations and generations and generations of living here, that another culture would come in and wipe them out and would nullify their ownership of the land? just as that culture could not imagine how much things would change, what will this place be in 1,000 years, in 2,000 years? So noticing change, so integral to the practice. And then, of course, as you settle, and as you begin to recognize that the subtlety and the nuance of constant change of the flow or the stream of your experience, you also begin to see more and more clearly into your relationship to what's changing. And you recognize the degree to which you resist. To that degree, you will experience rope burn. So I was trying to think of a good example of this. And I went to an experience that I've had for probably 20 years, which is an irrational affection for the New England Patriots. I don't know where you are on February 5th, 2017. May not strike you as a special day, but it was the day the Atlanta Falcons and the Boston Patriots met for the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan, the babyface quarterback of the Falcons, was up against the demigod Tom Brady and the Boston Patriots. The Falcons were young, they had a lot of energy, and they were sprinting all over the field, swatting down passes and making tackles. And the Patriots, which the most winning team in the league, the real true professionals, they just looked a little older. They looked like they didn't have it. So in the third quarter, the Atlanta Falcons were winning 28-3. If you've ever seen people from New England wearing T-shirts that say 28-3, that's the moment. So somehow the demigod, Tom Brady, got to work and started making passes. And the Atlanta Falcons, who were so youthful and cocky and high-fiving, they started getting a little gassed. They kind of blew it out a little bit early. And so Brady scores, and then he scores again, and then he scores again, and then they tie the game. Now, up to that point, the owner of the Atlanta Falcons was with his wife on the sidelines, ready to run out and claim victory. And then the Patriots win the coin toss. The demigod Tom Brady hands the ball to James White, who scores, and they win the game. So why am I telling this story? Well, it was an awesome game, and it feels great to talk about it. But here's what was even more interesting than the game. After the game, you could find on YouTube these videos of people watching the game. And so for the first third of the game, they showed, people in the sports bars in Atlanta and all wearing their red, and all the guys were like roosters on steroids, they're like chest bumping each other and high-fiving each other. And then they showed all the video of all the New England people who are just like angry and depressed and sad. And then when it switched, the energy has just changed again. And suddenly the Patriots are fist bumping and chest bumping, and the Patriots are, and the Atlanta Falcons are really, really upset. And then watching them watch the game, it was like, just collective, like, yes, get him, oh, no, and the back and forth and back and forth. And what was really interesting was to watch this and then play it at twice the speed. And you could just see the, like, and I realized in watching this, it was hysterical. But then I thought, how does this relate to my meditation practice? That's what we do. we're inflated, we're deflated. We're sad, we're happy. We are constantly reacting to the moment. And sometimes the reactions are, they're really gross reactions, and sometimes they're the subtlest of reactions. And sometimes in your practice, you'll find yourself completely in some reactive mode. You know, anger, aversion, whatever it may be. But other times when the mind gets very, very subtle, you can sense how the reactivity is still continuing, but more and more subtle. Just the gentle pushing away, the gentle reaching toward. And this becomes an integral part of paying attention. Rupert Gethin. As long as their attachment to things that are unstable, unreliable, changing and impermanent, there will be suffering. When they change, when they cease to be what we want them to be. If craving is the cause of suffering, then the cessation of suffering will surely follow from the complete fading away and ceasing of that very craving. Abandoning, relinquishing, releasing, and letting go. So releasing and letting go. What is it that we're letting go of? Well, you could say you're letting go of your story at times. You have a fully developed story about this situation, and somehow you can let go of the story and then re-arrive in this undifferentiated, raw experience of here and now. Again and again and again. And every time in your practice when you find that you're caught in that clench and that reactivity to something that's changing, when you can turn to it and say, I'm going to be with this if it feels safe. That is a radical moment. That is such a radical turning in your life. And traditionally, of course, we override that clench. We override that impulse to turn and look at what it is that is the source of our discomfort. We tend to experience emotions in waves. And the analogy I find is how grief can come in rogue waves. You know, when you've lost someone or lost a pet, there's just that sense of equanimity, and then here comes the wave. You know, it forms from the inside, it gets more and more intense. And what happens as that wave crests, that's usually when we bail. That's usually when we spin off into one of those five mind states that Kate spoke of. When we spin off into aversion, anger, ill will, blame, or we disassociate and go off into planning or fantasy, or we get lost in that the restlessness and worry, the hamster wheel of worry with no resolution. Or it's like something just pulls the plug and we get deflated. Or we get paralyzed by doubt or the ruthless critic. But when you can stay on the wave, when you can allow it to grow and to crest, on the other side of that wave is something really interesting. Sometimes it just feels like a weather system passed through. Sometimes it can feel like a sense of integration or relaxation. Sometimes, not all the time, there might be a cognitive insight. There can be a clear recognition of something you were holding on to that now you have a sense you don't have to hold on to it. Or you might recognize a belief that maybe isn't true. And this becomes our practice. A good friend of mine wanted to explore something going on in his life. He was getting really angry toward his 11-year-old son, and he was upset at his actions. And he was getting feedback from his wife, and his son was getting a little uncomfortable around him. His 11-year-old son was a really good soccer player, and he was in a soccer league, and he was like on the first team, you know, sort of the equivalent of like the varsity team of the 11-year-olds. But he was losing interest in soccer. It just wasn't that interesting to him. And my friend was just hounding him around practicing and trying harder and really just kind of getting irrationally angry toward him. And he didn't know what was going on. So we talked about it a little bit, and as he was sort of kind of unwinding this, he told me how when he was 9 years old, he immigrated from India to northern New York State. And he didn't speak English very well. And in school, the kids made fun of him. You know, they made fun of the way his food smelled. And he was so filled with shame. And he went on to become an extremely successful doctor and just an amazing, amazing person. And then suddenly he made the connection of his terror that his son, in not making that first team, would experience the shame that he felt. And then when he took some time to kind of connect those dots and then take it inside, one of the most profound memories of mine is just seeing him weep for himself. For the shame of that young boy and the connection of just the fear and the clench he was holding toward his son. Something was changing in his life, and he didn't like it. And he resisted it. And he chose to turn to look deeply at it, where he could see what was holding on. And he let go. On the other side of that wave, for him, was a sense of relief and release that he hadn't felt in such a long time. A sense of appreciation and gratitude for his parents who did their best. A deep sense of love and care for his son. A sense of possibility that maybe his son was living a different life that he had, and there might be a new way that he could be with his son and be with his other children. But there was also a bigger shift, a whole shift about his story, and a sense of spaciousness that sometimes we rush through. And Tara spoke so beautifully of after the rain, that when you feel something tight and constricted, when it releases, to slow it down and open into that space, that is a space of profound mystery. Who are you without that story? Quite often in our practice, there can be a sense that we're supposed to really focus on the hard stuff. And when it's there, we are. Absolutely. When you have the firepower, the concentration, the mindfulness, the relaxation, the curiosity, all those factors, that when you sense something that's between you and feeling free, and you have that intuitive sense to look closer, to examine your relationship to what's changing. And you take that into the body, and you sense how intimately you can feel it, and you sense its roots and its tendrils and how old that is, and you inquire as to how to be with it. When you sense what it's like to nurture it through empathy or compassion, there are tremendous, tremendous possibilities that may not have existed moments earlier. But in the same time, that in your experience, when you have those moments of expansion, when you have those moments of the immeasurables, the little hits of joy, of compassion or kindness, or just the sense of spaciousness, it is incredibly potent and powerful to investigate those states too, to get familiar with those states. So forgetting and remembering. Even when you're doing concentration practice, when you're kind of in the gathering and collecting part of your practice, when you're sustaining attention on an object, and that moment when you realize that you're lost in thought, that moment of recognition. I had used the word in the instructions of like that can be a moment of celebration. That might be an overstatement, but maybe it's not too strong a word. What just woke up? What is it that just woke up out of the stream of thought forms? And you may find the more you settle as we continue our retreat, to slow everything down. The moment of recognition, to take your time to re-arrive and find your place again. There's no rush here. So as you're aware of what's changing, as you're aware of your relationship to what is changing, it opens up this inquiry as to, well, who is it that's aware here? Speaking of change, have you noticed how the temperature changes in this room? I was thinking our letter should say, bring a ski jacket and a swimsuit. So this first characteristic of reality is anicca, seeing the impermanence, the inherent impermanence of our experience. The second is dukkha, sensing the dissatisfaction, the unsteadiness, the stress that occurs in direct relationship to how you're holding what's changing. And it points toward this third characteristic of reality, which can get a little woo-woo. It points toward this idea of selflessness or not self, of anatta. And it points toward somewhere where the linear rational mind cannot go, which is why it's so hard to describe it. When I think about experiences that I've had where I've experienced or tasted those moments and I try to describe it, it just sounds like a drug experience, like I've, you know, just one extra hit on the bong and there you go. Ram Dass tells this great story. I think he was maybe doing a little extra chemical boost to his meditation practice, but he describes this moment where he just opened to the vastness and he got it. And he wrote it down. He wrote down, like, here's the answer. And so later, you know, he fell asleep. The next day he got up and he kind of made his way to his bedside table and opened the journal and it said, just be. All of us have had that experience of not self. as simple as waking up in the morning. Where were you? You know, that sense of first, what time is it? Because time has disappeared. And then, I'm back. You know, who is it that's back? We can taste this experience through the phrase from the Buddha, nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I or mine. Nothing, nothing is to be clung to as I or mine. So it's those moments when the I, or the sense of this is mine, when they fall away, it's the space that's there when that arises. An interesting portal into this is through doing sound meditation. So I thought we might do a little practice, and I'll just offer a few suggestions to kind of try on. So if you like, you can close your eyes. And as you close your eyes and as you just soften your breath, you might let your attention open to this 360-degree perception of sound. And you might sense that there are a few ways that you can listen. One is the habitual way of listening through the linear and rational mind, where your mind will very quickly identify the source of the sound and give it a name, and then ascertain whether it's of any threat or not. Another way of listening is sometimes described with the words bare attention, where you are experiencing the sound vibrations. And you can experiment, is it possible to experience the sound vibrations without a label? And you might notice that you cannot hear better by trying harder. That this requires a very deep inner state of receptivity. You might notice as well that you have absolutely no control over the sounds. Yet you are aware. Is it possible to release control of the sound and rest in open awareness? The sounds are not you. you are the awareness of sound. Can you imagine that you could open to all phenomena in the same way that you open to sound? Relinquishing all control. Yet intimately awake. Nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I or mine. In the absence of I and mine, who are you? What are you? You might now gently deepen the breath. If you like, you can open your eyes, or please feel free to remain with them closed if that feels more comfortable. This is such a delicate space. It's not something that we can make happen. But this is where the different forms of practice can come together beautifully. The practice of arriving and gathering and taking this mind, which is so habituated to roaming freely, and calling it back again and again, like training a puppy. You know, over time, with patience and persistence, that the puppy begins to sit for longer and longer periods of time. And when you establish this sustained sense of here and now, noticing this natural arising of the flow and the stream, noticing more and more subtlety what's arising, what's passing away, the attitude in your mind, the either gross or the subtle grasping or pushing away, the moments when you can allow. And then from time to time, as we'll be exploring more in the days ahead, taking time to rest, to let it be. That open, spacious presence where you can sense of just for a few moments who you are in the absence of I and mine. There are very challenging ways to kind of describe this, but another way to sort of sense it. So imagine you're in a movie theater and you're watching a movie. It might even be some replays of the demigod Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. And as you're watching the drama, you get caught up in the action. You find yourself dramatically involved, really engaged, excited, disappointed, inflated, deflated. And then as you're watching the movie screen, something tells you to look over your shoulder. And you look back and you see the projector. And you see that this is film 24 frames per second passing in front of a light bulb. It's in that same way. Not to force it, but from time to time, just to deeply pause and just sense, who is it that's aware right now? So as you're meditating, you do the practices to arrive. You gather your attention on a focal point. You notice the phenomena arising and passing through, the sensations, the thought forms, the stories, the different states. Sometimes it's dramatic. You're caught in the drama. And then you remember, everything changes. Everything changes. My relationship to what is changing is a direct reflection on the degree to which I will feel stress and suffering. And that when you're caught, when you feel the reactivity, when you feel the clench, the stickiness, that can be a moment to call on those two wings. See it clearly. Look closely. And sense what it's like to call on loving presence, whatever that means for you. We each have to wire that up. Empathy, compassion, kindness, calling on a lineage, a teacher, nature, the mystery, whatever it may be that will cultivate a heart that can hold whatever is present for you. This peace around not self, it's better to not try to intellectualize it, but to let yourself taste it from time to time. I like to think of it as quite often a glimpse practice. You just get a glimpse of that sense of spacious, open awareness. And that informs you quite deeply. So the Buddha spoke of these three characteristics as a natural byproduct of paying close attention to the moment-to-moment experience of your life. And at any given moment, you can explore what is changing right now. What is present and what is changing? What is the attitude in my mind? How am I holding this moment? And who is it that's aware? Can I let it be? Can I let it flow? As much as our practice is about building concentration and arriving and gathering, being fully here, being in this step as you're stepping, this sip of water as you're sipping, this hand on the door as you're opening the door, as much as is it about the granular experience of what's happening here and now, it's also about opening to the mystery, the space that is holding all of this. So I'd like to close with a reading that I really love. I only roll it out every now and then. But it really points toward this mystery of not self, the mystery of what it means to be in this amazing journey. This is some lines that are from a teacher by the name of Adi Da. And he gave a little talk to the kids in his ashram. And Adi Da, or Da Frijan, he's also known by Da Frijan, was a brilliant teacher and a flawed character. But I think the words that come through him really speak to our sense of what it means to be in this mysterious journey. So if you like, you can close your eyes. And you might imagine yourself as a little kid listening to this older man later in his life. Nobody, not mom or dad or grandmother or grandfather or big sister or big brother or teachers or doctors or soldiers or reverends or athletes or lawyers or TV stars or people who are working or any people who are playing, not even the president, not even a king or queen, not even people who love each other know what a single thing is. It is a great and wonderful mystery to all of us that anything is or that we are. And whether somebody says, I don't know how anything came to be, or God made everything, they're simply pointing to the feeling of the mystery of how everything is. But nobody knows what it really is or how it came to be. As long as we go on feeling this mystery, we feel free and full and happy, and we feel and act free and full and happy to others. This is the secret of being happy from the time you are small until the time you are old. If you will remember every day to feel the mystery, and if you remember to feel that you are more than what you look like, and if you remember to be the mystery itself, then you will be happy, and all kinds of wonderful happenings will come up for you. You'll feel happy, and you'll always help and love others, even those who are having trouble feeling happy, and even trying to make you forget the mystery. Someday you may meet someone who's felt the mystery really strong for a long time, so that person feels the mystery a lot and is always happy. Such a person is the best person to learn from about happiness and life and love. I hope you remember to feel the mystery every day, as long as you are awake forever. The best thing to tell anybody is to remember to feel this. I've been doing this for a long time, and it is the best and most important feeling of all. I'm happy I could tell you this. You and I can always remember that at least one other person somewhere is remembering and feeling and loving the mystery right now. Thank you for your kind presence and attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.